You are tuned to CICK News on 93.9 FM in Smithers. CICK News is your news source for regional and provincial news Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 4 p.m. It's hosted by Dan Messick and myself, Pamela Hassan. Find and follow CICK News online at smithersradio.com and frequencynews.ca or wherever you get your podcasts. CICK News is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada.
Today on CICK News, we're coming close to the end of another year, and as such, we like to reflect back on some of our most memorable interviews from the past year. Take a listen. This first story comes from February 27th. After more than a decade, the Northwest Resource Benefit Alliance finally inked a deal with the government of BC for $250 million over 5 years. This was hugely significant, but for many, they believe that this is just a start. Here's that story from February 27th.
Sean Buitash, I am the mayor of the city of Terrace.
Great, Sean. Thanks so much for being with us here on CICK News again. Of course, a big announcement last week, $250 million for the Northwest Resource Benefit Alliance. This is a pretty big deal. From your perspective, from the mayor of Terrace, as the mayor of Terrace, what does this mean for your community?
Well, this is a big deal for all the communities in the Northwest, not just Terrace. All of us have been struggling with large infrastructure deficits with no way to pay for it, mainly because a good chunk of industry is outside of our communities, and so we have no ability to tax them. So now with this deal in place, this will give us money to start fixing that shortfall of infrastructure deficit that we have. You know, you look at it as City of Terrace, and we haven't figured out the funding model yet, but, you know, on average, I'm paving one major road project a year, and this could mean I could be doing five or six.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, this is, you know, going to have a big impact on that type of infrastructure, and we've seen, especially over the last few years, the roads have been getting more unruly. There's more heavy trucks on the roads. Obviously, with a lot of this, development, resource development, seeing the activity, the infrastructure takes a beating. How is this going to kind of make up for that, knowing that, you know, this is about $50 million a year? There's 21 communities and regional districts that are part of this alliance. It breaks down to, you know, a couple of million a year if everyone gets an equal slice of the pie. You know, what is going to be needed going forward to see this maintained so that we can, as you mentioned, catch up with some of the infrastructure deficits that we currently have?
Well, you know, this is over 5 years, but I think that is just an opportunity for us to prove out why there's such a need in the Northwest. We can start doing projects. And just, you know, we'll continue to prove that need. And I think when you know, we start to hit year four or something like that, we'll be back in the government and just renegotiating a move forward deal. They've got a long-term deal in the Peace Regional District, and there's no reason why the Northwest wouldn't have something long-term that's very similar. And, you know, and keeping in mind that the deal in the Peace Region is one regional district is $50 million annually, and what the deal we just have acquired is $50 million for three regional districts. So it's significantly less than what the Peace is getting, but it's a really good start.
Yeah, Sean, just really quickly, it sounds like once the money starts flowing, it's going to flow pretty quickly now that it's a set deal. What's kind of top of the list for your community? What are the needs right now that this money is going to go towards?
For us, it's critical infrastructure. You know, we look to our neighbors in Prince Rupert and see their water situation, and we're not there. But if we don't start fixing the critical infrastructure faster, we are in a trajectory to get there. So we really need to put a lot of this money into critical infrastructure. I'd love to say we're going to buy a bunch of shiny new toys like we've seen some of the communities in the Peace do, but we're not there yet. We need to fix critical infrastructure. We need to make sure that we're supplying water to our residents, that there are sewer pipes are not overflowing. And so that will be probably our number one focus, you know, and then, but in the end of the day, that is the will of council. So council will make those decisions.
All right. Mayor of Terrace, we'll leave it there for now. Thanks so much for your insight on this, and I'm sure we'll talk again.
All right. Appreciate you. Thanks so much.
That was Sean Buitash, Mayor of Terrace. Prince Rupert was also celebrating in early 2024 when they received word they'd be getting more than $200 million to commence work on replacing 100-year-old water mains under the city's roads. Another big deal given that Rupert is Canada's third largest port. Here's that story from April 2nd.
I'm Herb Pond, and I'm the mayor of Prince Rupert.
Great, Herb. Thanks so much for being with us again here on CICK News. Of course, a pretty amazing announcement came last week. $250 million over the next 5 years to the Northwest BC Resource Benefit Alliance. This is a project that has been 10 years in the making, and this is the first real substantial financial commitment from the provincial government. Maybe walk me through kind of your visit with the other mayors from the region down to Victoria last week, and what did you hear?
Yeah, so as you know, there are three of us that are the co-chairs for the much larger organization. We each have been appointed by our respective regional district to carry this ball forward. And we knew, we'd had meetings over the last year and a half. Of course, people have been, as you said, working on this for 10 years. I happen to have the pleasure of being one of the people that got to carry the ball over the line. But there's been a ton of work done on this over years. And we had lots of signs and signals that we were getting close. And at the same time, there's always debate within government, as there should be, as to each funding request and how it gets handled. And we wanted to make sure that people didn't forget us or forget the Northwest. And so probably a month ago, we let the premier and others know that we would be coming down to be there for the throne speech. And then also for budget day, and what we were telling them was we wanted to be there to celebrate the good news because we were confident that it would be including this in this upcoming budget. And so that's why we were there. We had some meetings and then there were some follow-up meetings with staff from our staff. So just a really good, productive push to get it over the finish line. I can't say enough about the efforts from my MLA, Jen Rice, but also all three of the MLAs supported it. But Nathan Cullen was instrumental as well. Big day, Serena.
Yeah, no doubt. Just the last thing for you, Mayor Pond. Of course, this has been about 10 years in the making. It sounds like it had support from both sides of the aisle, both parties, major parties in the province. Of course, we're in an election year, so we'll see a provincial election later in the fall of this year. What's your hope going forward, seeing this initial 250 mil over the next 5 years, but where does it go from here? What could come next is what I'm really curious about. So where do you see the alliance going from here?
Well, it's early days, but I think so. First of all, we have to get the allocation formula and sign an agreement with the province that works for everybody. But there's been early discussions that say there's a momentum that's been built by us coming together. And are there opportunities for the communities within the RBA region to find other ways that we might work together? Here's one small example is if all of a sudden we're all going to do some road paving, maybe it works better if we don't bid against each other for the limited resources that are available. Maybe if we work together, we can put together a plan that allows each community to get the paving done a little more cost effectively. Don't know if that can happen or not, but there's the kind of thing that because we've begun to work together on this alliance, there's I think other opportunities going forward.
Microplastics are everywhere in our environment, our stomachs, and in our food. Trying to locate the source of these plastics is near to impossible. However, the North Coast Ecology Society is trying to do just that in Prince Rupert. From May 16th.
Yeah, my name's Colin Matson, and I'm one of the directors on the North Coast Ecology Center Society here in Prince Rupert. And that society's been around for a decade or so, and I've only been a board member the last few years. But its mandate is to try to promote awareness, understanding, and respect for the special attributes of the North Coast ecology, with the specific purpose of developing a aquarium for sharing information and educating people about special attributes.
Yeah, and as we were talking before, it looks like the container, the public containers, is almost ready to open, and it looks like it's going to be open all summer, and people get to go in there and see creatures and also learn about what, you know, uniqueness that the North Coast ecology has here, because it is quite unique. And which brings us to the issue at hand, that the study that you've undertaken, or that you're a year into, looking at microplastics and how, I would imagine, how that affects a lot of this ecology. And so maybe tell me, how did this kind of come to be, and what precipitated this? Why did you want to start looking into microplastics here on the North Coast?
Well, the society has been looking at a variety of different opportunities to learn more about what's actually happening. So there were several directors. Some of the society a few years ago had started to zero in on the potential for a microplastics kind of study, and had learned about a company based out of Victoria, or the Santa Pilincha, that was a scientific research company, but had developed a citizen science approach to collecting and analyzing microplastics. And it was through learning about that company and what they were doing that some of the previous directors had sort of earmarked this as a potential project. That we then began with a little bit of funding from Department of Fisheries and Oceans, the Science Branch, Environmental Studies Group, provided some initial money, and we ran a 4 or 5 month project. 4 or 5 sites in the harbor here, some which required boat access, some which we could drive to. And essentially the process is collecting a 1 meter square subsample from the beach, but it's a series of randomly selected samples, half a dozen for each site, mm-hmm. once a month, and 5 centimeters deep. So 1 meter by 5 centimeters deep. Collect the substrate off of that, label it, goes into a bucket, goes back to the laboratory, and subsequently is sieved, and then analyzed for microplastics. It's a long and laborious kind of process, sifting through that and then identifying the microplastics. And they can be identified in a way that helps to identify the particular type of microplastic, and then we can take a subsample of those and send them to this company in Victoria that will determine the polymer structure of the microplastics, which is provides us some information about where it might be coming from. Where's the source of the microplastics in the environment that's lodged in the environment? And we look at various sites around the harbor. So some are protected bays, some are more exposed bays, but trying to get a bay with some finer sand or fine gravel, but mostly sand and silt mixed in with gravel is what we've got. So yeah, that initial project showed, yes indeed, there was microplastics to be found in the beaches through the winter months, and it was only a 5 month project, that first project, but sufficient information to enable us to apply for a 2 year longer funding program. That is where we're at now. We've wrapped up the first year of that, and into the second year funding of that at this point. And now we've added a few sites. There's a site at the mouth of the Skeena River, and there's 2 sites out in Chatham Sound, one at Lucy Island and one out by Stevens Island. And so these added sites are to try to get a little further information about the source of the microplastics and you know, to check out. We're all still in the early stages of learning about this, but to see if there's a greater quantity and prevalence of microplastics that originate from marine industrial debris, fishing debris, fishing industry debris, old aquaculture debris, that kind of thing. There's a variety of sources, but certainly that's what we found to be quite the prevalent source. And so this way it gives us a bit of a handle, and also the one at the mouth of the Skeena, it's siltier substrate there, of course, it's an idea, it's an opportunity to see if we aren't getting plastic material that would be sourced through the Skeena itself. But it's still early days. We can't really say anything categorically about what we're finding yet. And although microplastics seem to be everywhere.
Territorial disputes have a long history in the Lower Skeena. And in 2024, it would appear some of those tensions spilled over. Signs along the Skeena corridor between Prince Rupert and Terrace were vandalized and in one case set ablaze. Things have calmed down since, but this story sure stands out from 2024.
From June 6th.
Last week we reported about the RCMP investigation into vandalism to several signs that were erected along the Highway 16 corridor by the 9 allied tribes of Lac-O-Lams, outlining their traditional place names and territorial boundaries. It was also previously reported that the Cassix Wilderness Resort sign was set ablaze in early April, which is owned by Kitsum Kalum. In the past, territorial conflict due to overlapping claims along the Lower Skeena have a long-standing history in Northwest BC. We speak with RCMP Corporal Madonna Saunders, North District Media Relations.
Well, back in April, the 26th, actually, the RCMP in Prince Rupert did receive a report of mischief to property. Numerous signs that had been erected in various areas along Highway 16 have been vandalized. In fact, one has been taken outright. The cost to replace these signs is estimated to be well over $5,000. And certainly the RCMP have an ongoing investigation and are looking to the public to help provide some information that perhaps can forward this investigation and perhaps lead to finding out who is responsible for this damage.
Yeah. Do you know how many signs were damaged or taken?
Well, there was five signs, I believe, in total that have been damaged, and one was outright taken. Not sure as to why people have done this, who may have done this, and certainly looking to the public to help us.
If the public, folks in the public are hearing this and they do have information, how can they pass that along?
Well, certainly contact the Prince Rupert RCMP directly, certainly can call Crime Stoppers if you wish, or any detachment of the RCMP will be happy to take information and pass it along to the appropriate detachment of jurisdiction.
And just the last thing for you, Madonna, you know, when something like this happens, you know, what could be the consequence in removing or damaging property like this?
Well, certainly mischief to property is a criminal code offense, and if convicted, would be subject to the consequences outlined in the code.
Corporal Madonna Saunders, North District Media Relations.
In August, the Gitanao Hereditary Chiefs put up blockades around the Cranberry Junction area to stop LNG trucks from reaching work sites on Niska lands, part of the Prince Rupert Gas Transmission Project. The blockades were up for more than 3 months, but now the project is in limbo, and as it awaits final government approval or not, back in early September, I visited the Cranberry Junction to find out what led to another pipeline conflict in Northwest BC.
From September 3rd.
My name is Deborah Good. I'm Chief Wat Akhiyat. My territory is at 11 kilometer where our cabins are. Yeah.
Okay.
And for the Gitanao Hereditary Chiefs.
In what capacity?
That's negotiations mostly. Protection of the territory is priority. Yeah.
I guess maybe you can explain to me what's going on here. You guys have quite the blockade here up on 37 at the Cranberry Junction. Maybe tell me a little about how this got going and what am I seeing here? It seems like there's a lot of traffic.
There is a lot of traffic, but just to be clear, I'm here on Gamlachialtuk's territory, and we're blocking LNG equipment from coming down the Cranberry Connector. I'm not for LNG, but I'm here because I'm here to protect what the environment, for one thing, our fish and our wildlife. And LNG, PGRT sent trucks through over a week ago. And my daughter almost got run off the road that day. So it became a danger for people that travel this. And if you've been here since this morning, you'll see the traffic. Highway 37 is like a freeway. But we sat and we watched as they brought trucks through. There were three that came through. And when they were coming back, the speed limit close to our ranch is at 30 kilometers. These guys went by at about 120 kilometers on a dirt road. So you fear for your life, you fear for people's lives, but we fear for wildlife. Because our territory, we have moose, we have bears, we have other animals that cross the road. So it was about, but it's about protecting the environment and protecting our lands for the future generations. If you listen to some of the releases that have gone out, APTN, In the Process, Global TV, CFDK, CFNR. We're not here to hinder people that are traveling and enjoying this wilderness area. We're here to block LNG. The main reason, PGRT did not come to us and tell us what their plans were. Oh, we already have an agreement with the Gitnyaw chiefs that was signed over 10 years ago. Well, guess what? We burnt it. Because we need an environmental review. We need to have that certificate changed. And it's about what is important to our people, and even important to people that don't actually occupy the land but travel through. And a pipeline, it's going to ruin it. You know, anytime that you go under a river, over a river, and you'll hear, you know, some of our members saying that that is nothing but a big black monster that is going to hinder wildlife and other things. It's going to hinder how we fish. It's going to hinder how we live on the land. It's going to hinder how we harvest off the land. And I understand that there's opposition, you know. It doesn't matter what you do, there's opposition. But when are the British Columbians going to stand up for the environment? You can drive up and down the territories from 9 Mile to Metiadin to Surveyor's Creek, and you will look at the ponds, the creeks, spawning creeks, and see that the water levels are so low that those fish cannot even make it up those creeks anymore. But we're here talking money. At the end of the day, my question is, are you going to eat that money? Money comes and goes. One day we're poor, one day we're rich, and we're back to being poor again. That's a native life. And protecting the territory is such that there's always a guarantee that you will survive because you have the land. The wealth is the land. I have no qualms with tourists. I have none with companies that come in and they're logging. In fact, they do it for us. And I don't stop local people from coming. The road's open. Go and enjoy the territory. Keep it clean, but go and enjoy it. Because the only objective for me is to block LNG. PGRT is not going to make it. Because when the time comes, those lines, those pipes start being laid on the ground, in the ground, under our ocean floors, under our rivers. These are the people that are going to be there. And we won't be alone. We're united. And I know that. When I sit here, I see my great-grandmothers. When I sit over there, I see them standing here. When I drive down the road, I see them at the boundary. So anyone who says that we're not united, better think again.
And finally, 2024 saw one of the hottest political contests in BC's history and one of the strangest. After BC United, formerly the BC Liberal Party, threw in the towel at the last minute and dissolved by way of a takeover by the BC Conservative Party, who then went on to create one of the largest official oppositions in BC ever after only having 2 seats in the previous legislature. It also saw the unseating of Nathan Cullen here locally, former longtime MP of Skeena-Bulkeley Valley and now a former first-time provincial minister, after losing to Sharon Hartwell, the former mayor of Telqua, with a landslide. Definitely one for the books. We spoke with Tamara Davidson, MLA for North Coast and now Minister of Environment, also the only Northern BC riding left in NDP hands. As well, we spoke to Sharon Hartwell about her big win in Smithers.
Tamara Davidson, the newly elected MLA for North Coast Haida Gwaii, and we're here in Prince Rupert.
Great, Tamara. Yes, I assume you're the MLA-elect right now, as we're still seeing results come in. It's not exactly clear where how the dust is going to settle in terms of the distribution of seats per party, but it looks like it's still a pretty tight race, but the NDP picking up a number of seats. You've picked up your seat. Tell me a little bit about how it feels to be a first-time MLA, a successful MLA.
I would say that it's really humbling and it's really overwhelming to be the first Indigenous MLA for this North Coast Haida Gwaii riding, and to be able to represent my own community of Haida Gwaii is a big responsibility, but it's also extremely fulfilling, and we really ran a campaign on trying to inspire people, and I'm so proud of everyone in the riding coming together and sharing and supporting each other. I mean, that's what we do in the North, is we support each other through our challenges, through our issues, and I'm really looking forward to really working with a lot of people here.
Hi, good morning. I'm Sharon Hartwell, and right now I'm in the village of Telqua because that is where I live. So I'm here with Dan, and we're going to have an interview about the campaign.
Sharon Hartwell, the new MLA-elect for Bulkley Valley Stikine. Thank you so much for being with us here on CACK News. You have unseated the long-term MLA and MP for the riding, Nathan Cullen. He is also a cabinet minister in the former NDP government. Sharon, how does it feel to finally get elected in Bulkley Valley Stikine?
Well, it feels really good. Lots of conversations at the door about people wanting change. So I was happy to step up and help provide the face for that change. But ultimately, it was the people of Bulkley Valley Stikine that initiated the change. So they were looking for something different. And here we are. We're here to do that.
That wraps up our 2024 year in review. Thanks for listening. Tune in Thursday and next Tuesday for the last episodes of CICK News for 2024. Merry Christmas and happy solstice.